All right, let's get started, y'all. This is adult Sunday school class. We have been.
I got no volume.
I don't know. Sounds voluminous to me. What'd you say, Gary? I feel the same. All right, we were going through, we started Deuteronomy, and we've been going through these books of the Bible, and they seem to be helpful to get a big context and overview of what is actually happening in the Bible. Find the thread, what's the theme, what are all these stories tied to? And so Deuteronomy, just a quick rundown here, fifth book in the Bible. It is essentially the second giving of the law. It's the second time, the second generation, the next generation really, that's actually going into the promised land. If you remember, the first generation dies off in the wilderness because they don't want to go forward and there's no place to go back to. And Hebrews talks a lot about that, where there's, you know, if you're not going to move forward with Christ, there's really no place to go back to. So that's the state of the nation. Their first generation dies in the wilderness, not because God is hateful and mean and he just hates people. They die in the wilderness because that's their choice. They choose not to move forward. They believe the evil report spies. And so Deuteronomy is Moses at the precipice of the promised land telling the nation, the new generation, hey, this is what you're into. This is the covenant. This is the law. This is the recipe for the nation as you go into the promised land. And this is what your fathers did before you. This is why they died in the wilderness. And don't be like them, basically. And three parts to Deuteronomy. You've got, whoops, that's not the one. Chapters 1 through 11 basically deal with the history of the nation in the wilderness, out of Egypt, and it's the mediation of the covenant. Then chapters 12 through 26, which we're going to cover this and maybe finish the book today, we'll see. Moses gives the terms of the covenant, basically re-giving the law. He gives the law again, but there's a lot more commentary from Moses this time about what all this is about. He saw the failures in the first time around, and he doesn't want that to happen again. And then the final part of Deuteronomy is the ratification of the covenant, and that's kind of the chapters 27 through 34. Moses will end up dying at the end. These are his final words to the nation. Yeah. So he dies at the end. And Joshua is tasked with taking the nation into the promised land and all that. So we'll try to finish Deuteronomy today. We'll see if we can. But let's pray, and we'll cover this material. Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you for these words that you've given us. And I pray you'd help us understand. I just want to understand what your words are, what you said, why you said it, and that you would guide us through your book this morning, particularly through Deuteronomy. And I pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. All right, so Deuteronomy. Let me get your brains working, try to anyway, at the beginning here. So Genesis, real quick. Somebody, give me what's the point of Genesis? What are we doing in Genesis? We're starting.
God gives
very good summary. God establishes the seed. This is the solution to sin, and figure out where we're going with it. Who's it coming through? Exodus. What's happening in Exodus? What are some things that go on in Exodus? Egypt, they leave. And what is the point? Why is God doing this with Israel? Why is he not doing it with China? Right? And what makes them special among other nations? What did you say, Jennifer? Seed of Abraham. They are, hope, maybe I'm not asking it right, but they are the only nation carrying the solution to sin. That's the only nation. They have in them the Messiah. Now, he's not born yet, but he's coming out of this nation. He's not coming out of China. He's not coming out of the United States of America. He's not coming out of Egypt. He's not coming out of, you know, Madagascar. He's coming out of the nation of Israel. Then in Leviticus, you've got the establishment of holiness, and you find out that within the nation, in the nation of Israel, that not all Israel is Israel, because there's people that are going to be cut off from the nation. So what makes the difference between whether you're actually a part of the blessings of God or you're not a part of the blessings of God? Any ideas? Obedience, yeah. He gives light, and if you obey the light, well, you're a part of the blessings. What'd you? Somebody said it over here. Faith, yeah. Faith. So, and then by numbers, you just start separating out. Even in Leviticus, you start separating out people. And so not all Israel, and Paul would say this, not all Israel is Israel. Apparently there's people that are born of Abraham, people that are born of Jacob, that are not going to be a part of these blessings. And so numbers sort some of that out, the census, who's who. Then Deuteronomy, obviously by this time you really realize that an entire generation has been wiped out and will not participate with God in these blessings. And so, though they're all children of Abraham, though they're all descendants of Jacob, though they all have the right heritage, they're not going to be participants with God in the blessings. So Deuteronomy sorts it out. So this is the second time Moses gives the law to this new generation. We covered chapters 1 through 11. Now we're in Deuteronomy. We covered chapters 1 through 11 last week. Chapters 12 through, right here, 26 is where we are today. And this is the second part of, the second section really of Deuteronomy. There's a pretty clean break there where after Moses has said all his stuff about the history and the mediation of the covenant, now he starts giving out the law and explaining the law. There's a few things, I may not want to deal with this yet, but there's a few interesting problems that I don't understand that show up in the law, but maybe we'll come back to that one. But chapter 12, we'll go back here. Chapter 12, he gives dietary laws and restrictions and who's going where and offerings and things like that. And this is really just a rehashing of a lot of the law. Let's see. I'm debating whether to go over this or wait till the end to do this. We'll do this at the end, maybe. So, dietary laws, things like that, places to offer sacrifices and places not to offer sacrifices, all that. Chapter 13 deals with false prophets. Remember, because the central point of the whole nation is the temple and the tabernacle and the presence of God and the truth. And so people show up and claim to be carriers of the truth, and then the Lord tells you how to deal with false prophets, which you see abundantly after they get into the land. There's people showing up in Jeremiah's day by the end, and the false prophets do a couple of things. They lead the people into more carnality, and they convince the people that obedience is not really a part of any of this blessing. It's just ethnicity. It's just being a Jew makes you special with God. And so the false prophets would say stuff like that. And the real prophets would say, no, you need to actually obey God. He gave you light for a reason. And so this is the struggle. And Moses tells them how to deal with false prophets that show up. Dietary laws for tithing purposes. This is interesting. We'll come back to this one. These are just several laws. There is something that I want to mention in 15. In chapter 15 and 16, you've got Sabbaths and holidays and things like that. But if you go to Deuteronomy 15, there's an interesting explanation here that Moses makes in verses, starting in verse 6. And I'll, I don't want to step on your toes about Dave Ramsey, but he's probably done good for a lot of people. But the loaning and borrowing is not a sin. That has actually there's restrictions on it. Let me get this thing off. There's some restrictions on it in the law, but the Israelites were expected to loan to other nations, and they were expected to be generous with what they had. And so one thing that shows up is every seventh year, there was essentially a doing away of the debt, where you just cancel the debt every seventh year. This is the Jubilee year, or the Sabbath year, you just cancel the debt. And one thing that's said about this, if you are a wealthy Israelite and you know the seventh year is coming up and you have someone who's in need, you know, in the first year you can lend and then get your money back and things like that. But when you're starting to get down to the final months of the seventh year and somebody shows up and they need money, the expectation that you're going to get paid back is not real high. And Moses knows this. And this is part of the heart of the people that he's addressing with these blessings and the way God orders things. And so he says this. This is pretty interesting because it really gets down to people's hearts. In Deuteronomy 15, verse 7, it says, if there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates, in thy land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thy heart, nor shut thy hand from thy poor brother. But thou shalt open thy hand wide unto him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient for his need in that which he wanteth. Lending, borrowing, things like that. Borrow a servant to the lender. That's it true. It's not a sinful thing. It's just the true thing. Verse 9, beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and thine eye be evil against thy poor neighbor, or thy poor brother. And thou givest him not, and he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be sin unto thee. So this is a really specific thing, but it reveals people's hearts, where there's a potential that if I lend to this guy, I'm not going to get paid back, because we're coming up on the seventh year, and I got to release all the debts. And so I know he's in need, but I also want to get my money back. And so Moses says the calculation for generosity is not, it's not mathematical, it's moral. And so you decide to be generous, not because the seventh year is coming up, but because this is what God wants. And if you decide to withhold because you don't think you're going to get repaid, Moses says, beware, that's a wicked and evil heart. That's the start of something that is, I want to withhold good from someone who needs it. And James will talk about that in the New Testament. You know, he knows to do good and doeth it not to him, it's sin. It's exactly what Moses says. When the seventh year is coming up and you know it's coming up, and all of a sudden somebody shows up with a need, and it's a real need, it's legitimate, and you kind of calculate this thing like, I don't know if there's enough time for him to pay me back. And you say, you know what, no, just we'll pray for you, go along your way. Moses says, oh, that's wicked. That's choosing evil. And so, like I said, Moses really, in the second giving of the law, he really starts explaining like the heart problems that people have had in the nation. And really the heart problems that God is trying to address with the nation and with the people here. So that's an interesting little explanation for Moses here about this Sabbaths and holidays in chapters 15 and 16. And, yes.
Is there really an expectation this is alone for us as opposed to giving? Because it says it was brought up before, but has not. And it says, thou givest him not. Is that an expectation that you're going to get it back, or are we just saying you need to be generous?
Let's look at maybe verse 6 helps a little bit. For the Lord thy God blesseth thee as he promised thee, that thou shalt lend unto many nations, not borrow. So that's part of this rule. And so your question, Gary, is, are we just talking about generosity, or are we talking about lending and receiving? Yeah. Yeah, because there's lending laws, and they're expected to lend to their neighbors in need without usury. There's another part where it talks about without usury, like you don't lend with interest. And that's not in this particular section, but that's part of the law as well. But there are lending laws, and lending was part of the generosity of the nation. Like, God's going to give you good, and you're supposed to disperse that good at no cost. Mm-hmm. It's what it seems like, yeah. They're releasing the debt in that seventh year, and what it seems like Moses is saying is, if you know the seventh year is coming up, and you may not you may not get this money back.
My thought was, you don't give it to your poor brother, basically that becomes a sin. I think there's some folks that you don't expect to give it to them.
Right. Yeah. Which, in probably a lot of situations, that's the wiser thing. Where you just, like, no strings attached. This is not going to become a thing in our relationship. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. I think there's both parts to this. The lending is part of the generosity. And they are expected to give, too. They're expected to give. Well, since you brought it up, this is something that I think sometimes Christians or Christianity, the Bible, gets unfairly beaten over the head with, about there are responsibilities from the borrower. It's not just, you know, you come and tell me you need something and I'm obligated to give it because you told me you need something. There's obligations on the borrower to, establish what's going to happen. I mean, are we contributing to sin here? What are we doing here? And so there's some of that's in the law too, actually. But there's obligations on both sides. Any other questions? Anything else? It's good questions. I hope it answers. We're answered. All right, chapters 17 and 18, Israel's leadership of kings, priests, elders would be essentially subject. The prophets they're the highest in the order of things. Now, when Samuel comes along, 1 Samuel comes along, that switches. officially. It switches. But the prophets are the highest, essentially, like Moses is the law in the land. He's not a king, but he's the law in the land. He's a prophet. The lawgivers, there's rules for leadership. And this is going to really start pointing to Christ as the king. He is the lawgiver. He is the king. He's the priest, prophet, all those things. He's the prophet. And in fact, I got a couple of verses here to look at. Look in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15. This is where Moses specifically explains a prophecy about why the nation is doing what it's doing. That somebody's coming along, and Moses isn't the guy, but someone else is going to come along who's going to be the prophet. So Deuteronomy 18, verse 15, "The Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him ye shall hearken, according to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God, in Horeb in the day of the assembly," that was in Sinai, "saying, Let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, neither let me see this great fire any more, that I die not." You know, the Lord's a consuming fire, that thing. "And the Lord said unto me, They have well spoken that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him." And so this is a specific prophecy about the seed that they're carrying, the Messiah that's going to show up. And you know that because in the New Testament, this is referenced. And let me show you this one. Look into Acts chapter 3 at the preaching of, I think this is Peter. Okay. It may be where they are because it looks like it's still going. Acts chapter 3, verse 22, the prophet. So Peter and John are preaching, and they say this, 3:22. "For Moses truly said unto the fathers, A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren like unto me. Him ye shall hear in all things whatsoever he shall say unto you. And it shall come to pass that every soul which shall not hear that prophet shall be destroyed from among the people." So again, not all Israel's Israel, things like that. The ones that listen, the ones that obey, these are the people. You can skip down to verse 25. "Ye are the children of the prophets and of the covenant which God made with our fathers, saying unto Abraham, And in thy seed shall all the kindreds of the earth be blessed. Unto you first, God, having raised up his son Jesus, sent him to bless you in turning away every one of you from his iniquities." This is the prophet. And this is what Peter and John are saying to the people. This is the prophet is Jesus. And you killed him. And that's not good. And then chapter 7, this is Stephen. He's going to directly say it. And this is really the Antichrist religion here at work, because everything that gets tied to Jesus Christ, it really angers the Pharisees and the religious crowd. But Acts chapter 7, verse 37 here, Stephen's preaching. He's going through. He covers the whole history of the nation of Israel and ties it all to Jesus Christ. And he says, verse 37, "This is that Moses, which said unto the children of Israel, A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren like unto me, him shall ye hear. This is he that was in the church in the wilderness with the angel which spake to him in Mount Sinai and with our fathers, who received the lively oracles to give unto us, to whom our fathers would not obey, but thrust them from them and in their hearts turned back again to Egypt." And he goes through some of the history there. But he's talking about Jesus Christ. And eventually he gets to that that point. And they understand it. The The Pharisees, the religious people, understand that he's tying all of this to Jesus. And when they, I mean, they're just fuming as Stephen goes through this and goes through this history. And by the time he connects it all to Jesus Christ and says, you guys hated the one that you're made for. You were made for the Messiah. Your whole nation is created for this. And they are just irate at this time. But Stephen had said, this is Moses. Now, he's not literally Moses, but this is the same one that Moses is talking about. Jesus Christ is that prophet. And so that was all said by Moses. It gets applied, you know, several times as the apostles get dispersed and preach to the nation. So this goes back to Deuteronomy 17 and 18 in Deuteronomy here, but I was going to say that Deuteronomy is one of the most referenced books in the New Testament. It's one of the, between Isaiah and Psalms, Deuteronomy may be the most. There's so much said that ties to everything that's going on in the New Covenant and Jesus Christ. Then you got chapter 19, the cities of refuge, and these real estate laws are explained. Really a wise way of handling lawsuits and criminal charges. And I don't know if I got the verses for this, but I'll tell you what the law is. The law basically states, and some of you guys have heard of tort reform, you know, and trying to get rid of frivolous lawsuits. So one of the laws in Israel was if you bring a charge against somebody, and you can't prove that charge, and it's a significant charge, then if you are found to be bringing a false lawsuit against somebody, then whatever punishment you sought for them goes on you. So if you sought $1 million from somebody because you said you stubbed your toe on their land or something, and it's found out that you're actually lying about this, and this whole lawsuit is a fraud, you owe the landowner $1 million. So that kind of cuts out a lot of the just, you know, we're just going to bring a frivolous lawsuit because there's no reason not to. You're not going to be punished in America for bringing a frivolous lawsuit. I don't know. I don't think you are. But, you know, there, yeah. But, well, there's that rule in Israel said that if essentially you have to pay the damages that you sought from the person, if you're proven to be a liar and you're just bringing this lawsuit to because you're greedy and things like that. So that's a pretty interesting thing, but it shows that these blessings of God and this light that God is trying to instill and lead the nation in are societal and community blessings that deal with people, dealing with other people. How do you deal with other people? How do you live with other people? And so some of these expectations, this is kind of new stuff for a nation to act this way. So that's chapter 19. It's real estate laws, cities of refuge. City of refuge was essentially if someone died, and it was your fault, but you weren't malicious in it. You could get to a city of refuge, and basically they would have to try this case. And there's a lot to this, but it was basically a safe place for people who weren't necessarily criminals, but they were involved in maybe the killing of somebody is accidentally or something like that. And anyhow, I won't go over the whole law, but that's kind of the idea, part of it. Then you've got chapter 20 and 21, military laws, capital punishment. Some of the military laws were like, if you get married, then you're not going to be sent to war for a year. You get to stay home. And if you bought a new house, you get to stay home for a while. You don't go to war. And so these are some of the military laws that Israel had. And then capital punishment. things that were so violent and so bad that they warranted capital punishment. That's in 20 and 21. 22 through 26, civil and social laws, and Moses kind of ends this section the way he started it, with the characterization that Israel is a peculiar people. They are different. They are not just different, but they are characterized by God. They're characterized by divine instruction. That's the way they're supposed to be understood. And so all of these laws that are light to the nation, if they lead or are led by these laws, then they will be a peculiar people to God. And so Moses kind of ends that section same way he started it, about the people being a peculiar people. So that's the laws, terms of the covenant. The last section is the ratification of the covenant. This is 27 through about 34, the end of the book. Let's deal with some of these. Chapter 30, verse 6, if you want to go there, show you something. But this deals with the conditional blessings. Again, you may be born to Jacob, but if you're not going to listen to the light that you're given, you're not a part of what God's doing. And that is so clear over and over. There's conditional blessings and cursings. If you do this, this happens. If you don't do this, this happens. If this, then that. If this, then that. And obedience, like Beth said, means you'll be my people. Disobedience means you'll be cut off. Doesn't matter who you're born to. Doesn't matter if your dad's Levi or your dad's Moses or your dad's Jacob or your dad's Abraham. And again, you'll notice that this is the mentality that Jesus Christ comes up against when the religious people keep saying that we're Abraham's children, and he keeps telling them, I understand biologically you're related to Abraham, but you're not God's children. You keep thinking you're God's children because you're biologically related to Abraham, and that doesn't make you God's children. Obedience to the light that you're given makes you God's children. Faith makes you God's children, which Paul thoroughly explains in Galatians. And so Deuteronomy, let's look at this one, chapter 30, verse 6. This is something that Paul's going to pick up in Colossians. But it's something Moses said. Deuteronomy chapter 30. Verse 5, for some context, the Lord thy God will bring thee into the land which thy fathers possessed, thou shalt possess it, and he will do thee good and multiply thee above thy fathers. And the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. So that's the idea. You cut away. Paul would say in Colossians, it's the circumcision made without hands. And it's done by the words of God. Hebrews talks about that. The word of God is quick and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, dividing soul and spirit, all that stuff. It's the same principle that Moses put forth about the circumcising of the hearts. And it shows you that the original act of circumcision with Abraham and Isaac and Ishmael, the family there, was a representation of something that was really more important than that. And it was a heart that was directed towards God, and it was removed from carnality. So, because the carnality was the problem. Anyhow, so you got that. We got that one. Conditional blessings, cursings. These words will circumcise their hearts, just like Hebrews says it. Hebrews chapter 4, I think it is. And then Paul would say it in Colossians 2. Circumcision made without hands, cut away the flesh, the body. It's basically cutting away carnality so that the spirit is able to give some direction and light to the person. So Moses identifies that. He delegates the new leadership. Joshua is going to be the new leader. And Eleazar is going to be the high priest. And this is kind of sad, because after Moses says all this, this is his farewell address here. But after he says all this, he doesn't really have much hope that the entire nation is going to be very faithful with anything they've been given. So he says this in Deuteronomy 31, verses 28 and 30, or 28 through 30. Moses says this, "Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. For I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord." So you're going to wander away from the Lord. You're going to wander into these treacherous paths in life, and evil is going to follow you. To provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. And Moses spake in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. So this is his, he just doesn't seem to have much hope in the totality of the nation. There's a few here and there that are going to be faithful. But as a nation, he anticipates that they'll wander off and eventually be consumed by evil. And that's his understanding of how the nation has gone and how the nation will go eventually. And it's kind of sad. And this is his last words here. In his song and blessing of the tribes, it's a description of the Israelites traveling through the wilderness from Sinai to Moab. There's the verses there, 33, 26 through 29. How God has dealt with the nation. You'll notice in verse, I think it's chapter 33, verse 29, the word saved, that the nation was saved. But I want you to notice that, because the word saved doesn't always mean what you think it means, and as far as saved from hell or anything like that. The nation was saved as they were rescued out of Egypt. They were redeemed, and a lot of the redeemed people were lost people. So as a nation, they're mostly lost, though they are saved. It's kind of wild. They've been rescued by the Lord to be a light unto the nations. This is pretty clear by this time. It's very clear this is what the point is of the nation, and God's going to bring about the seed out of this people, really whether they believe or not, it's going to happen. And chapter 34, Moses dies. Joshua is full of wisdom. He's ordained as the leader of the nation and right before this. And so this is the end of Deuteronomy. The death of Moses, the ordination of Joshua, and the instruction, final instruction to the nation by Moses before they go to the promised land. So you guys have any questions about any of this? We've got a little bit of time here. Any thoughts? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, there's stuff in here that I don't. Yeah. So, all right. I think you guys will have the same trouble understanding this that I did. I understood that the nation has these dietary laws. You know, don't eat shrimp, stuff like that. So when Moses starts giving the law, there's a couple things he says that I don't understand the context of what he's saying. Yeah. So what I'm trying to figure out on, like you're saying, is are these dietary laws specific to the sacrifices they're bringing? Is it specific to the priesthood? Or is it for the whole nation? Because this is something that shows up. You look in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 15 and 16. That's a legitimate question. Maybe you guys can answer it. Maybe you'll say, duh, this is what he's talking about, which would be great, because I don't know what he's talking about. So I'm understanding that, you know, don't eat shrimp if it has, you know, this many legs, or if it has wings or whatever, you know, there's these, if it, the fish that doesn't have scales, don't eat it, all that kind of stuff. But then right off the bat, Moses says this when he's given the law in chapter 12, verses 15 and 16. Verse 14 for some context. Or 13, let's do 13. Take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest. So there's specific places for these offerings. But in the place which the Lord shall choose in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings. And there thou shalt do all that I command thee. So in every tribe, there's supposed to be a place for these some of these offerings. He says, notwithstanding that thou mayest kill and eat flesh in all thy gates, whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee, the unclean and the clean may eat thereof, as of the roebuck, as of the hart, only ye shall not eat the blood. Ye shall pour it upon the earth as water. I read that, and maybe you guys have some insight, but I thought there was dietary laws. I don't know why he's saying you can eat anything you want to. The only thing you don't eat is blood, which that's actually something that's said in Acts 15 when they're going to the Gentiles and they say don't eat blood. So this was a question. It's just a question. I don't have an answer to it. I don't know why he says this. Right. It's not really, but yeah, that and that's true. It's the blood. True. There is. That's true. Yeah, I don't know. Are the people?
So it's the people.
Okay.
Right. So we're giving a story of the roebuck and the heart.
Right. So if you're ceremonial and clean, you can eat the clean animals.
Okay, I see what you guys are saying. Okay, that helps. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, as I was reading as eat clean and unclean and doesn't matter, and it's like, well, you just gave a bunch of dietary laws to... That makes sense. Okay, well, that answers that for me. Oh, yeah. 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 Apparently, that's a thing.
Well, the blood is the sacrifice.
What'd you say, Bella?
The blood is the blood. They're witchcraft based, too. They use blood.
Yeah.
That's the
blood.
He mentions it.
Well, that is like what Bella said, and you're saying, Les, that when he talks about like cutting hair sometimes, that's tied to like markings for the dead.